to lean over and scream into Wes's microphone in the middle of the table.
Well, it's supposed to pick us up.
Yeah, but it's not as good. There's not that much background noise. I guess you can turn the volume up and stuff.
Well,
but there's not too much background noise here. But there's still some.
You're saying that now, Mark. But when I put it through the compressor, everything in the background, including the people in the background who are picking their nose,
right,
you'll hear it.
Then don't put it through the compressor. What can I say?
So, greetings.
I just feel like they need a prop. One of my stories, I should have brought a prop.
Okay.
Maybe I could take it. Hello, I'm the world famous Mark Bernay,
and this is, I'm Wes,
and this is a Slurpcast.
What?
You'll see.
I'll see.
Yes.
And you're listening to the WNO show,
right? But on Slurpcast.com.
Yeah, that's www.slurpcast.com.
Right, and we call it that because I'm supposed to have a clicker, but I'm just making noises with a knife because I don't have a clicker.
People are looking at you because you're hammering into this table.
Oh, I didn't think of that. Oh, you have a point there. Okay.
No, but go ahead. It's okay. It comes with the price of the meal.
Okay. what we do is we eat dinner and do a podcast at the same time.
What?
So it's our concept called the Slurpcast,
because
we don't care if we slurp our food and the sound effects come in.
Well, we did have a goal, and that is still true to this day, to a certain extent, which is for every new technology that comes out, there's usually a foundation somewhere in the past.
Right.
And Mark and I like to explore that.
And we sometimes actually do, but like last week, for example, we talked about the foundations of YouTube from 1985. Be sure to play the video that shows what YouTube was like in 1985 when it first started.
Right. And I'm going to go beat up those people in the background who are screaming and laughing and having a good time.
Excuse me, we don't have the right microphones. You have to shut up now.
Yeah, I mean, it's just wrong for people to be excited right now with the economy the way it is. I mean,
exactly.
They should be happy in the background, drinking and carrying on like they've got a never-ending amount of money.
Right now. And they all look retired, too. Don't they realize their retirement is all going to go away and they're going to be poor and homeless? Don't they understand? Anyway,
I think they're here because they don't want to understand.
Yeah, I was telling Wes that I ran across this site, though, that called munchcast.com, M-U-N-C-H-C-A-S-T, that had the same idea apparently at one point. But,
Before we do anything like that, where are we eating? We have to talk about that.
Stanford's Restaurant and Bar in Walnut Creek, California.
Yes.
The good Lord willing and the creek don't rise.
What?
No, that's an old phrase. You know what inshallah means in Arabic or something, where they'll always say, you know, they won't promise to do something. I'll meet you tomorrow, God willing. They'll always throw that in. So in the South, in some parts of the United States, they would used to say, I'll meet you tomorrow, the good Lord willing, and the creeks don't rise.
What's the creek?
Just the creek.
Oh, creek.
Creeks.
Oh, I see.
I call it creek.
Okay.
That's a standard pronunciation of it.
All right. And flood everything, everywhere.
Right. So anyway.
So this is a pretty nice restaurant, pretty upscale. They serve lots of different types of meat, prime rib, crusted New York peppercorn.
Right. I would like that, but it looked expensive.
$35.
That's too much.
That's I mean, the prime rib is 29.
Sure.
What's going on? What? 29er.
Sure. But for
Mark
25,
saved
but,
I'm
but
saved.
They have a special. They have a $25 dinner special that tonight is beef tenderloin stroganoff, and those specials come with your choice of soup or salad and creme brulee for dessert.
Yeah, it comes with that.
But how do you parse that? Is that soup and then in parentheses, or small salad and creme brulee?
I don't know.
Or is it soup or small salad in parentheses and creme brulee?
No clue.
It gets very, very complicated.
The most expensive thing is the peppercorn crusted New York.
Yeah.
So that's what you do.
Okay.
How are you doing, gentlemen?
You're doing well. Good.
Alright. So, any questions for me?
Yeah, can you give me avocado on the hamburger? Avocado or guacamole or something?
You can add whatever you like.
Yeah. Yeah, just get a classic hamburger but with like guacamole added.
Classic avocado? Guacamole?
Yeah.
But we don't actually have a guacamole, we have just an avocado salsa. Which, similar to guacamole, in my opinion, better than guacamole, because it's not all mashed up, you get big chunks of avocado in there.
Okay, we'll try that. Yeah, okay. And then, french fries.
Anything else for you, sir?
And like didn't have like medium well. Kind of that should be enough.
And I'll get the barbecue burger. And what does that come with?
Comes with your choice of fries, potato chips, or house salad.
Can I get the house salad with Italian or
balsamic vinaigrette?
Sure, that's fine.
Anything else for you, sir?
That's it. Mm-hmm. We got a guy here whose name is Wes.
Yes, sir.
It's my name as well.
All right.
So we just shook hands as he came in here.
He's got a statue, right?
Yeah.
The big guy. It looks like Lurch in the Adam.
So we will take it.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Cool.
I haven't been using my clicker properly.
So where are you going to... Okay, when are you going to get to the...
I can do it now, I guess. This has absolutely nothing to do with technology, nothing to do with the internet whatsoever. But my favorite webpage that I read last week is... You know how everyone knows you can train dogs and train certain types of animals, but they assume you can't train cats. And the reason is that just no one ever tried, and they've discovered that if you train cats to stay using the same modern techniques that people use for training dogs, you can train cats just fine. They're actually smarter than dogs, and they learn all the tricks. You can get them to come, and you can get them to shake hands, and you can do all that stuff with a cat if you train it right.
Really?
Yeah, I haven't tried this with mine yet, but... But it involves using a clicker. That's why I was trying to train you. Every time you did something right, I was trying to click and encourage you, you know, see. But
that would scare me as a cat. I think a clicker would kind of like freak me out.
Well, I have a clicker I once got at a Comdex show. I once got this really loud clicker meant to be heard across the hall. And that was, I tried that one. That is kind of really loud. It does scare her.
Okay.
So you're supposed to get an appropriate, you're supposed to get the kind of clicker that's used for dog training.
Well, does it mean food? Like, I can understand if you click and then the cat gets some food.
Yes, that's what you do. You first of all train them that the clicker
is
a surrogate for the treat later.
Mm.
So you click it and give them a treat, or click it and pet them, or click it and do whatever they want.
All right.
So that the click is an anticipation of that you will get that thing.
Okay.
But the point of the clicker is that if you're doing treats and stuff like that, or especially a petting kind of a thing, you can't get the timing right. So let's say you want the cat to shake hands. You wait till they move their paw a little bit, and then you want to reward them immediately when they move their paw.
Okay.
But if you just go over and pet them and stuff like that, it takes too long and totally distracts from what they did right.
All right.
So you have to, first of all, train them that the click is associated with the treat later.
I see.
And then the moment they move their paw, you can immediately click and get the timing perfect for the training.
So that means to the cat that this is a good thing, raising my paw.
Okay. Right. So you can get them to combine behaviors and things like that.
Right.
But apparently that's the modern way of dog training and all of that, is that they use clickers nowadays for doing it. So you can buy dog clickers easily, and those are supposed to work on cats if you do it right.
Okay.
So anyway.
That's cool. Nice.
So I'm going to try that one of these days. My cat might be too old. But,
so they have videos on YouTube and stuff of cats that have been trained?
I'll have a link.
Okay.
I'll put a link on slurpcast.com where we put all the backup material for this podcast to this article. And I forget. I read it on the iPhone. I think it had a video, but I couldn't run it from the iPhone, or they're selling DVDs or something. But yeah, you can get material on how to do this technique and stuff.
Cool.
So...
Well, so the big story is the fact that Apple dropped the iPhone NDA.
Right. So. And I think I understand why. I think I understand what that's about, but I'm not positive. But there's this application that a programmer was trying to get in the App Store that would do online downloading of podcasts.
Okay.
So, you know, the iPhone can already do podcasts, but you're supposed to download them with iTunes in a kind of a batch and then sync the iPhone with your latest batch of podcasts. So someone wrote a program that could pick up podcasts over the air, and it would check for new ones over the air and download them over the air, so you wouldn't have to go home and plug the iPhone into a computer to get them.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple refused to put that in the App Store, saying it's just trivial, it's just a duplication of what's already in iTunes. And even though there's lots of other applications in the App Store, such as different kinds of calculators that are basically duplicates of iPhone apps, Apple took that position on this particular one and refused to put it in the App Store. So they wrote a letter to the developer telling him that.
Okay.
The developer then posted that letter and got a lot of people to protest to Apple that they wanted that product.
Yeah.
And then the developer then started using a beta test, something that you're supposed to use for beta tests as a means of distributing it. Like if you buy the you'd be paying $100 to become an Apple developer. Mm-hmm. You can write applications for your own machine and for niner other machines of other people in your company and stuff like that.
Okay.
By this special mechanism where you have to know the serial number of the particular machine, and you can then send them a file. I've never actually done one, so I'm not sure exactly the mechanism for installing it.
Okay.
But the developer sends you a copy of it that's key to your serial number, and then you can install it.
Alright.
So this guy started selling it that way, with the beta test method, but no one seemed to realize that there was a limit of 100. As far as I understand, there's a limit of 100 doing it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know why would the guy bother, how much is he going to make, money he's going to make just selling it for 100 of them.
That's
you
it.
Know. Yeah.
Unless he applies to be a developer in multiple ways.
Yeah, unless he has several, yeah, maybe he's calling it multiple programs and pretending, yeah, I don't know. But anyway, Apple was pissed off that he was doing that because that totally gets around the agreement, because the purpose of these 100 copies is supposed to be for beta testing only, mm-hmm. or something, or within your own corporation only. You're not supposed to be selling them and just mass distributing them that way.
Okay.
So Apple revoked his certificate so he could no longer distribute any more copies of it.
Okay.
And Apple also threatened to sue him for breach of contract, or at least complain. I forgot if they really threatened to sue him, but they were complaining that he violated the non-disclosure agreement that developers have merely by revealing that Apple refused to accept it from the store. Because apparently when he signed up for the developer program, he signed a non-disclosure agreement to keep everything about this private, including your communication back and forth with Apple.
Okay.
So everyone was really mad about that. Why is Apple trying to stop this guy and all that?
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, and it may just be coincidence or may have nothing to do with it, but all of a sudden, Apple has decided to drop the NDA for developers unless they're beta testing the whole something new. As long as all they're doing is developing using the released mechanisms, the released open mechanisms, there's no longer an NDA. And they can now reveal their communications with Apple, I guess, or whatever.
Okay. So they just changed their communication internally.
Or something.
So it's worded better or something.
Yeah, I'm not 100% positive that dropping the NDA would allow him to reveal the communications with Apple, or whether it's only dropping the NDA as far as being able to reveal how you're coding it, or what your coding techniques are, or things like that.
Shut up!
I know.
Take it home!
So anyway, but I don't think it really means that much. I think that's really all that it's about.
It looks like it's huge thing where basically, like, now suddenly developers have the freedom to talk amongst themselves about what's going on, and
oh, that's true, too. Yeah, that was one of the complaints. Yeah, if you take the NDA literally, the developers couldn't even post things on bulletin boards about programming techniques, or I'm having this problem using the API, what should I do? Mm-hmm. People weren't even allowed to post things like that. So, so dropping the NDA lets them freely discuss that sort of thing.
Okay.
But I'm sure they were anyway. I bet Apple wasn't enforcing
that. Oh, yeah,
I'm
sure people were talking
about that sort of thing, but yeah.
Yeah. Huh.
So, that's all that was.
Yeah. Okay. Good interpretation. Yeah, because I didn't quite understand the whole thing.
Right. So, Google has something new. Did you know how you can go into Google News, and partly, if you go to news.google.com,
mm-hmm.
it's partly a search engine that'll interpret your search as only being for news items,
mm-hmm.
but it also gives you a bunch of news items that are current right now, where Google, they claim this is all machine done. They search all kinds of news sources around the world and find similar articles where a bunch of papers are talking about something that's clearly the same matter, even though it might be worded differently. So it sees how much chatter there is out in all the news sources for different concepts of news, and automatically builds the front page of a newspaper based on stories are popular and stuff.
Right. Because
that's been around for years. That's been around for very long, maybe not years, but a very long time. But they're doing the same thing now for podcasts. So is it, I forget the URL, go to slurpcast.com, but...
Is it basing it on tags?
No, it's...
How does it... Maybe search for something?
It's blogsearch.google.com or something.
Okay.
So again, it's just like the news one. The point is that if you type in search keywords, it'll search blogs only, things that identify as blogs only.
Oh.
Whereas if you do a regular Google search, it might show up some blogs as responses, but it'll show a bunch of other stuff.
Okay.
So when you search from this blog search, it'll only do blogs, but you don't have to search at all. You just look at the front page, and they see what kinds of things bloggers are talking about around the world.
Okay.
And they'll show kind of like news items. Now, there's here's a story, and they'll click to one blog and quote a little bit for that one blog. Here's 57 other stories, other blog entries that appear to be about the same story.
Okay.
So you just like they do about news.
Okay.
So it's just a good way to see what people are talking about, what the buzz is nowadays, what people are tending to be talking about.
I was thinking podcasts.
Did I say podcast? No, blogs.
Blogs,
yeah.
Okay.
Now, Google does have, that's another one I don't think I ever mentioned. Google does have an audio search engine that will search audios and videos. I wasn't really going to talk about this today, so I forget the parameters of it, but what exactly it is. But you can go there and you can type in words that you expect to show up in podcasts and YouTube videos and stuff like that within some parameters. And they have people or machines, I don't know which, converting all this audio stuff into written material and indexing it so that they're capable of searching by audio. You type in keywords, it'll find you where that is in the audio. Actually, now that I think about it, I knew it was something years ago that would do that to some extent. But anyway, but Google has a search engine for that kind of stuff.
Okay.
It's been out for a while.
Very cool.
Did you dip?
No. All the way around?
No, we both had burgers with different kinds. Did you get a burger?
I had a barbecue burger.
Oh, barbecue burger?
Yeah, and I had an avocado burger. Like I had a burger like with avocado or guacamole or something.
Okay. So,
yeah,
not this one.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks.
Okay. And we haven't recorded that we've ordered.
We can go back.
I know.
So, yeah. Are you not done?
Yeah.
Go ahead. So I watch one of my favorite shows on Fox is the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Okay.
Which is the Terminator series. I don't know if you watch any of that stuff. It turns out it's when the writer's strike hit, like basically all those really popular shows, Heroes, Lost, all that stuff, the writer stopped writing, and so the shows, stopped being aired.
Okay.
Well, now they're back, and everybody's all excited about Heroes and some of the other movies, some of the other series. And Sarah Connor Chronicles is one of them.
Okay.
But it turns out that it's very possible that it's no longer going to be aired beyond October.
Oh, okay.
Episode number 213. Which will suck because it's going to end with an unresolved plot.
They really have that many. They really have 213 episodes.
So the number
that's unlikely. That's unlikely.
Way,
yeah,
it sounds way higher than the actual number of episodes.
That would be like a champion show that broke a record or something. Yeah. 213.
So I'm wondering if there's something I'm missing here.
Yeah.
That's what I read. I enjoy that show. So.
Huh, maybe they assign. They're trying to be high tech, so they assign some serial numbers to the shows that. That has nothing to do with the actual number of shows that have been made.
It doesn't order any more episodes past 213, so...
No, but that's still a lot, though.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Have there really been that many?
How many years has it been on?
No, it's only been on for...
It's weekly? It's a weekly show?
It's a weekly show, yeah.
The weekly show, and they take vacations and stuff, there would be most 40 out of a year or less or something. I don't know how many they do that.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So it looks like there's a possibility it's going to get yanked out in October if things don't work out well.
Yeah,
but see, I think that there's a very good chance, a high chance that all these shows are going to continue on.
Well, you need to write letters. If you get a lot of people to write letters,
I think the economy is going to do it. I think if people are wanting to hide, there's this sort of idea that when it's hard to make money and you're stressed and people are unemployed, that everybody kind of turns inwards and watches TV.
Is it on a public? Is it free? It's on a free channel?
No, it's cable.
Just in the bad economy, people may not pay for cable that much.
Probably true.
The other factor, but true. Yeah.
Well, no, they'll all switch over to digital.
Yeah, it could all be. But they can watch it on the internet, I guess, or something. But,
Have you played at all with MySpace? MySpace Music?
No, I've occasionally looked up a band on MySpace or something, but not really. Nothing more formal than that. But they don't have banjos, so I wouldn't bother.
They're trying to partner with the big four music companies to be able to get licensing deals from musicians who have MySpace pages and have their music pages up.
Okay.
It's basically a way to make it legitimate for a producer or somebody who's looking for talent to scam through all the different MySpace pages of musicians and offer recording deals.
Okay.
What better way way to do that than to sit in your office and just simply look at the web and say, this guy's really great, let me hire this guy.
But there's someone who they're in a category on MySpace of musicians that they're publicly viewable and all that.
Yeah, the way
that,
the way that it works is you can set up a personal MySpace account, but you can also set up a music account, which is the same sort of thing with a focus on music that allows you to upload music files to that MySpace account and actually distribute those or allow other people on MySpace to play your music from that music profile.
Okay.
And that's how it works. There's controversy with this whole idea, though. The big four labels that have any an equity stake, but not the indies. And I'm not really sure what the independent record companies. It seems favored towards the companies that are more commercial.
Right.
So the ones that are independent and smaller record companies will not have the same opportunity to be able to license deals.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So,
okay.
Some controversy there.
I don't know. I haven't heard of anything about that at all.
It's something that's kind of... Middle Finger to Indies was the title of that.
Okay. But it's MySpace. The villain here would be MySpace itself, if there's a villain, or would it be the people who are searching MySpace looking for people?
Well, they're calling it MySpace Music, which is a part of MySpace.
Right.
And the answer is I don't really know, other than it's an extension.
Yeah.
They're basically saying that the big four music labels have an equity stake in MySpace Music.
Okay.
So there must be some kind of licensing that some agreement was made between these and MySpace
Only those four had the right to do this.
Yes.
Or something.
Yeah. So MySpace Music is basically saying,
you should list yourself on there. You do music and you wanted to become famous and stuff. You should list yourself on there.
I do. Yeah. Everybody wants to become famous. No,
You do the background music for these shows, right?
Yeah, I do. That's the one secret thing is that all the music that you hear in the background is made by myself. And, some snippets of music that I play are from experiments done by kids in a class that I taught many years ago. So
is that website still up? I'm still paying for the domain name for that website. So is it still
Rap Kids?
Rap Kids, yeah.
Well, that's the first program that I ran. Yeah.
Does that still work? Is Rap Kids still on the internet?
Yeah, it still points to the podcast music network, the PMN. Yeah.
To that particular project?
To that project, yeah. There was a more recent project that I think was more eventful. Okay. That was the 360 group.
Right. You never got a website for that, did you?
Yeah, I did. Well,
did you have a server one?
So that's the lostpants.com/360 website.
Okay.
And then and then a while back, Mark was happy with the work that I did with these kids in a lockdown facility, as you might call it. And he thought the music that was coming out of there was pretty cool, so he bought a domain name called rapkids.com.
Yeah, Wes already had the site, but he bought rapkids.com. I still pay for it. I was just wondering if they're still using it. But,
I don't know what the statistics are.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people go to rapkids.com, but...
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah, if you ever publicized it, probably not very many.
No, you could probably sell it.
Yeah. No, I don't know.
It's easy to do. Yeah.
Yeah, they wouldn't get that much. Probably wouldn't get that much, but
so that was in another life.
Yeah,
for myself.
Okay.
Anyway.
Okay. So there's you know how you have the Sony Book Reader and the Amazon the Amazon Kindle Book Reader.
Yeah.
But those are kind of thick, you know, in a way they're very small, but they're kind of really oriented about someone reading books, like, you know, that kind of thing. Not really that meant that much for business use or anything.
Mm-hmm.
There's a company, and we'll go to slurpcast.com, I'll post their website, called Plastic Logic, that's made a screen, a device kind of like the Kindle and things like that, but really thinner. I mean, just like the size of a piece of thickness of a piece of cardboard or something.
Okay.
A little bit thicker, maybe the thickness of two or three pieces of cardboard or something like that.
All right.
And they have these little tablet-like things that are maybe 8.5 by 11, or they can make them larger, but the screen would basically be 8.5 by 11 to be like a regular sheet of paper. But they have battery, computer, and everything all in that thing. So it's just like a like the size of a pad of paper, the thickness of a pad of paper, but the screen is the Kindle or Sony Reader type of a screen.
Okay.
And they have PDF viewers and different kinds of viewers in it, so you can. So it's made more for a business person than for someone who wants to read a book.
Okay.
But if you're a business person, you're going on a trip, instead of having to carry a briefcase full of all kinds of documents and spreadsheets and things, you just put it all on this one device and just flip around your documents on this sheet of paper.
Okay.
Or you can even have more of them. If you want to spend the money, you could buy two or three of them if you want to spread out different documents or something like that.
Okay.
And they have a very cool video showing how thin it is and kind of showing off the technology and stuff.
Nice.
That I'll post. But,
well, I was kind of disappointed in the idea of like digital ink.
Right.
So we did the Esquire. You got
Esquire, but that's a very low quality. The Esquire thing. They're very low quality.
These things called like digital paper, mm-hmm. and all these terms that are being used to describe these technologies.
Right.
When you get your hands on them, they're not actually like that.
Right. No, but this one is supposed to be the same technology as the Kindle or the Sony Book Reader, which aren't bad.
Uh-huh.
They're not quite as perfect.
Shut up.
They're not quite as perfect as a real sheet of paper, but they're better than you'd think.
Okay. Should we just record this guy's conversation?
Sure. Maybe we'll talk about passwords.
We'll hand over the reins to this guy on the cell phone next to us.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk about passwords or something. We can record them.
Awesome.
Then we have to figure out what the passwords to, though. That could be tricky.
Well, see, the thing that he doesn't realize is we're recording this, and it's going to be here, safe,
I know.
Posterity.
I know.
We can go back later on and edit it out.
Yeah.
See, that's the problem.
That's the problem,
because this sort of thing is just only going to get more and more...
I know.
With
I
people
know. Yeah,
getting
know.
On cell phones. And
I know. We told you to shut up. You wouldn't listen. Yeah.
So that'll be interesting. Do you have any... Are there video... There's a video.
There's a video of this technology, yes.
Okay.
And I think they're claiming they'll have something out next year. But the video kind of shows a guy... Well, the guy doing the video is like their corporate accountant or their president or somebody, whoever he is. He's showing the briefcase full of papers they normally have to take everywhere he travels to business meetings and stuff. And that whole briefcase is all replaceable by this one little pad of paper looking thing, you know. So that's pretty interesting.
We got 9 minutes left. Niner. So Duke Nukem.
No, that's 9 minutes for what? For what?
Duke Nukem 3D. I have to throw this in there.
Yeah.
This is a game that we've all been talking about for years to come out with. Do you remember the game Duke Nukem?
I never played it, but I've heard of it.
Okay, once upon a time when I worked at this company down in Palo Alto, mm-hmm. a bunch of us engineers, we got a brand new network in, and we had not used the network at all before. We had no network in this company. This is a startup.
Okay.
So when we got the network in, Duke Nukem was the first multiplayer network game that we played.
Okay.
And we stayed there till like 2 o'clock in the morning playing Duke Nukem.
Okay.
And it was like awesome. It was like the best thing. So the fact that after that, the Duke Nukem 3D was going to be created. It was just really exciting, and we wanted to, I personally wanted to see what that was about. And there were a lot of different gamers who were being told, oh yeah, Duke Nukem's going to come out here. CES is going to come out here.
Right.
It never came out.
Really? Okay.
So apparently it was released last week.
But for PCs and Macs, or for what kind of what platform?
I don't know. Let me see. It's the Xbox Live Arcade.
Okay.
So it's going to be
but not for the iPhone?
No. We'll see what that really looks like. But it's here. Right, it's done.
Okay.
Just want to throw that out there.
Yeah.
The only games I ever really played was... the original adventure game that was started out on IBM mainframes.
Oh, nice.
Everyone...
Scott Adams?
No.
Yes? No?
No.
Scott Adams?
No, was it?
Did he do, like, the original...
Adventure? No. I don't think so. I forget. Yeah, I really
I need to put a link. I need to put a link in the show notes for the Z Engine, which was Infocom's interpreter, which was basically their...
And that could play that game in a bunch of text things like
it,
right?
Yes, that was all it was.
Yeah.
It was the interpreter for programs that were adventure games. Basically, you'd use the Z Engine, and you'd build a game... using its library.
It's available on a lot of platforms. There may well be a jailbreaked iPhone thing that does it. I'm not sure.
I don't think there's anything on the normal iTunes App Store.
Probably not.
But I remember on the Pocket PC and the Newton, there was a Z Engine, and you could play literally the same games that were available to purchase from Infocom.
Yeah, it's on the web, too. There's websites that you can play it online and stuff. But anyway, everyone where I worked got addicted to this on the mainframes, and no one did any work for a couple of weeks, so I was kind of drawing out maps and doing all this stuff, you know. But
cool.
I drew it. I spent a lot of time. I drew a very comprehensive map of it. I probably have my map somewhere. Because I finished it. I was able to finish the game. And,
really?
Yeah, but that's the only game I ever really liked. And then this game called The Prisoner is the only other one based on the TV show. Kind of aborted very early TV show that only had 5 episodes or something, but there was a video game, a very early, you know, computer video game based on that.
Nice.
That I played with for a while. That was an Apple II game, I think, or something.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
About the only thing I ever, video games I ever really liked.
See, on that note, there's a new DS Lite that's going to be released, I think, today or tomorrow.
Okay.
They're going to do away with the Game Boy Advance cartridge on the back, which is going to be upsetting to some people.
That was the compatibility thing?
Yes. So they're doing away with that because they're slimming it down to make it very, very thin.
Okay.
So it can fit these very slim cards in from the new game.
Classic burger?
Okay. I had to get just some avocado oil or something. That's what I had.
Enjoy.
Awesome. Great. Thank you. Okay. No, it's
kind of
so good.
So, I don't know what the cost of it's going to be, but it's going to have a camera, a 3-megapixel camera on the back. It's going to be very thin, probably going to come out in multiple colors. I imagine it's going to be in some kind of a metal, titanium-like case or frame.
Okay.
Supposed to have an upgrade in memory, CPU, and the screen should be better. But other than that, it's going to run the same like OS.
Okay.
But
for $700, wouldn't you be better off with a high touch and play games on that? Because then you have all the everything else.
Exactly. I can't justify buying something like that when I've got this iTouch. Because then I'll be walking around with like my phone, my iTouch, and the DS.
Some people have their phone and iTouch combined into one device called an iPhone. Yes,
I will point out, Mark, that almost like, you know, it was about like, what, 4 months ago that you hated all Apple products and didn't want to have anything to do with an Apple
product. No, when I first had the first iPhone a year ago,
okay,
and gave it back, I said things that I wanted. I said I would buy it again if it did so-and-so.
Right.
And now it really does do all those things.
No.
Except for replaceable batteries.
Right. Yeah.
But. For the replaceable batteries, at least they have small pocketable external batteries you can plug in now.
Okay.
And I'm about to get another one that's a lot more capacity than what I have now.
Okay.
That's been shipped. I'm about to get it. So that at least does solve the battery issue, even though it's not the way I really like. And it does kind of do everything else I wanted.
Did you get a fried pickle?
Yes. Why?
What the hell is a fried pickle?
This. Right here.
Why? Why fried a pickle?
Okay, I'll eat it. Okay.
It's not that bad.
I'll eat anything. I don't care. If we don't have that much time, the one thing I want to talk about.
Yeah.
For all of you who took the advice last time and jailbroke your phone, you may be sorry. I'm telling you now.
Here goes Mark. He's backpedaling.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad I did it, and I like it and everything. But I've had two recurrences now where my phone got bricked, which means it just, you know, totally died and is unbootable. I mean, it kind of, you turn it on, and the logo shows up that it's trying to boot, but then it just doesn't really do anything.
There's a reason for the word bricking.
Yeah, because it refers to electronic devices that used to be much larger, like they could be the size of a brick.
Mm-hmm.
And if it just goes dead, it becomes just a useless brick.
Yeah.
You know, so the iPhone is just too small to really call it bricking, but that term is still used. So I bricked my iPhone about a week ago, and then I had to restore it totally to factory settings.
Okay.
There's some magic button presses you have to do to get a bricked phone in a mode where you can
unbrick it.
Where you can mode it and where iTunes will talk to it again. So I did that and I got it restored. And then because I had used that categories application, they're seriously thinking of not jailbreaking it again. Maybe it wouldn't bother again.
Okay.
It was because it was fun. I learned a lot from jailbreaking it, but maybe it wouldn't bother. But then all my applications disappeared. That's when I restored it to factory settings and then restored from the last backup that was a jailbreak backup.
Yeah.
Somehow a combination of some jailbreak stuff ended up being mixed in with regular stuff. So all my application icons had disappeared, and yet the applications were all loaded because I tried to install it again.
And
they would say they're already installed. You would reinstall. They'd reinstall, and it would show up there that I was reinstalling, and then instantly it would disappear again.
Okay.
So I finally realized those are all the applications I had moved into that categories thing.
Okay.
The categories thing turns off the application so it won't show up on the normal screen because it makes its own method of having it.
Hmm.
Well, somehow restoring it from the jailbreak stuff, the icons were still marked to be invisible. Even though the categories thing was no longer there to replace them with its icons.
Okay.
So I ended up with the iPhone working perfectly, except every application I moved to a category when jailbroken was now missing.
So
I had to jailbreak it again, at least to fix that issue, because there's a program under jailbreak stuff where you can choose to hide, run, hide different icons. And once I went back there, I just built categories again. I decided to stay there. We're just more careful what I downloaded just to try to avoid bricking it again. Well, yesterday I bricked it again. I really didn't do anything. I was just kind of playing around with it, so the installer app, it didn't really do anything. Suddenly it gets bricked again the same way. So this time, rather than just blindly restoring it, I looked around at methods of unbricking it, and I found one. I found an article that explains the cause, why jailbreak iPhones can get brick this particular way so easily. And apparently, even non-jailbreaked ones can sometimes have this issue where they'll suddenly get bricked as you install applications. So I did what that said, and I got it unbricked without having to restore everything.
So basically, everybody who followed...
You have to do this first. You have to do this right away. So later on, when your phone bricks, you can recover easily.
Oh, okay.
See?
All right. So this wasn't something they should have done prior to
the wouldn't know. Yeah, they wouldn't know that they should have done it. But they should. Okay. If you go into Cydia, or I heard someone called Cydia, it might be the correct pronunciation. Anyway, if you go into that, and on the front screen it has news and facts and stuff like that, go down and look at one for how to install OpenSSH. And just install that now, and it tells you what applications you use on a Mac or a PC to interface with it. Actually, it's Mac-oriented, but on a PC you can download the shareware thing called PuTTY, P-U-T-T-Y.
Oh, yeah.
And
that will
interface it. Because it wants you to install this protocol, which is kind of like a line-by-line protocol called SSH. That's a secure, encrypted protocol for communicating with line-by-line systems. And the iPhone is kind of, when you jailbreak, it ends up a little bit...
It's like Telnet, but Telnet is unsecure.
Right, but the iPhone ends up like a little bit of a Linux system with a command line interface stuff.
Uh-huh.
So if you install this OpenSSH following the instructions, then you can go to a PC or a Mac and use an SSH application to talk to the iPhone, at least in a command line mode.
Through the cable?
Through
the USB cable?
No, over Wi-Fi.
Oh.
But you can't do it cellular. It has to be over Wi-Fi. Okay. And yeah, you look at the phone. It explains this in the article, but you look at the phone and see what its IP address is on your Wi-Fi network. And you connect to it by that address and stuff. Okay. So, if you do that in advance and make sure that the SSH is always running, then when the iPhone gets bricked in this particular way, even though on its screen it's just hung in a boot loop, looks like nothing's happening, under the covers it's still alive and you can still connect to it with SSH. And I'll have an article posted that tells you exactly how to fix the symptom in just a couple of SSH commands from that mode. And it'll only happen at the moment you install an application. It won't happen any other time. And most of the time you install applications, it will not happen. There's just a low probability of this just suddenly happening at the moment of installing the application.
Okay.
So, anyway, so I'll post the link to that article and just run OpenSSH. Have that running all the time so you can fix it if you have to.
Okay.
But don't worry. If you haven't jailbroken yet, don't let that discourage you. It's so easy to fix,
mm-hmm.
and it's pretty easy to get it unbricked.
Right.
Using iTunes.
Right.
It's pretty easy using iTunes to get it back and restore it anyway.
Okay.
And all that. So don't worry about it. Everything's fine.
No problem here.
Yeah.
No, that is true. I mean, even if you're jailbreaking your phone, mm-hmm. just to see what it's like on the dark side,
right?
Then go ahead and do it. You don't have any problems, even if it does break your phone. You can always go back to the previous firmware.
Right. Although you better actually be pretty good at your Google searches and stuff, because you won't know how to do it. You have to do these weird button presses and
Wes's
stuff.
Wes's advice is just don't love the dark side. Whatever you do, right. You can go there just to see what it's like, but just don't love the dark side.
I love the dark side. Matter of fact, do you have an application of the day? Of the week?
I do.
Because I have another dark side application that I'm going to mention that really makes a big difference. It's just so amazing what it can do.
Really?
Yeah.
Why don't you go ahead?
Okay. It's brand new. It just came out like yesterday or something.
Okay.
Called Backgrounder. So it might be a little bit buggy right now because it just came out, but it seems to work okay. And Backgrounder lets you multitask on the iPhone. It lets you select certain applications that have a reason to continue running in the background and mark them that they can run in the background and stuff like that.
Okay.
So, for example, an instant messenger program that you want to leave running so it can pick up messages in the background and alert you when there's messages.
Okay.
You can do that. Not with all of them, but with some of the instant messenger programs are capable of running with this background thing. I found that it works with Safari, that you can start a long web page download and go off and do something else.
Okay.
And Safari will continue in the background downloading that web page, stuff like that.
Nice.
So it's kind of handy. It might be a little bit buggy right now, but it just came out yesterday, so there will be fixes for it, I'm sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
So my application, iTouch application of the week is a mind mapping tool.
Right.
Certain people like these, certain people don't.
I hate them.
The idea behind a mind mapping tool is it allows you to draw out your thoughts in a way where you can actually like physically have a circle for one item,
okay,
and then have that one item have other connectors to other circles which become a subset of that item,
right,
and then so on and so on, and you literally have an unlimited amount of space to draw these things. Project managers will use them to sort of show either the flow of a program, or just simply write out the idea or concept behind what a program is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
You can use them in almost any situation. Let's see. Outlines for books.
Mm-hmm.
You might be able to figure out that. You could also use it in the design of an adventure game if you want to.
Okay.
There's many, many different ways to use a mind mapping tool or a brain mapping tool. It's sort of a sketch pad that's easy for you to visualize all the different branches in a thought or anything.
Yeah.
You know.
But what's this one called?
This one is called iBlueSky.
Okay.
And it's not free.
Okay.
I forget the total. I think it was a $9.99.
What?
A nine.
It's only worth $5.99 for something like that.
Yeah, that's what they all say.
Yeah.
This should be free.
Yeah.
So $9.99. I think that's what it costs. Anyway, it allows you to send a PDF via email.
Okay.
It will also work with an open source version. I forget, it's called Brain Mapper.
Is that the one that, have you ever actually done the email? Have you ever actually tried it?
No.
Because apparently some of these applications, apparently the SDK for official apps doesn't actually have a protocol for adding an email attachment. And people do bizarre things with their email that only works with certain email programs in order to receive it or something. That's why I'm a little bit skeptical. I don't think it was this one, but you read a description of some other one that claimed you could email the files. And then users in the comments gave all the restrictions on how difficult it actually was to do that and why the SDK required it to do it in that weird way or something.
Huh.
So you should try it, see if it actually shows up looking like the attachment to some other program.
Yeah, I could do that as well. Interesting.
Same concept though. I personally far prefer outlining programs to mind mapping programs. And I think I saw one once for the iPhone. I've kind of got tired of, I actually don't like them anymore. I haven't used one outlining programs lately. But back when I was using them, I really liked them a lot better than the graphic mind map stuff. And there might be one for the iPhone, I forget.
Well, the line can gray. You can have Visio-like tools that do both, where you might have an outline section, and for each of the line items you have a bubble in the graphic part of it, and you can connect the dependencies between the bubbles in any way you want, and the placement of that item or that bubble in the outline format can change. So there are some tools that do both, but I just like this app for its simplicity. Mm-hmm. I really want to do something really fast. It works pretty well. Mm-hmm. The other apps that do the same sort of thing have people reporting bugginess and crashing. Yeah. And
is there anything on a PC and Mac that can open that same format?
Well,
is it a standardized format?
That's a good point. The developer of this particular application is going to work with the open source format that the freeware version for the Mac and the PC will allow. So I'll post a little bit more information about that.
If it's something like that, you might get really sick of updating it on the iPhone and the tiny screen and the horrible keyboard. You might really want to go back and forth and edit back and forth on a desktop as well. You know?
Yeah. And like Mark, I also do enjoy outlining apps, and I have a few outlining apps that I use myself that are awesome, and I'll talk more about those later. None of those things exist on the iPhone or iTouch yet, but hopefully we'll see something like that soon.
Okay.
Project management tools, maybe something that works with Microsoft Project.
Oh, yeah.
There is an app that works with some Symbian and some cell phones that actually works very much like Microsoft Project, including reading a Microsoft Project file itself.
Okay. Okay.
Without any kind of conversion. It's from a company called Twiddlebit.
Okay.
www.twiddlebit.com. Unfortunately, they don't have anything for the iPhone, but I suspect that if the developer is as forceful and aggressive as he has been with the Pocket PC and the Symbian phones, we'll probably see something like that from him.
Of course, on those other ones, you don't need permission. You just do it. Whereas for the iPhone. For those other platforms, he just does it. Whereas the iPhone, he needs permission from Apple.
But it is something that's useful enough to warrant, a Microsoft project app.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a pretty incredible program that this guy wrote.
But it's Microsoft.
No, it's not. It just reads and writes to
that
Microsoft
format. Yeah. Go ahead. Okay. And one quick thing about my app of the week. I said this backgrounder, and I talked about instant messengers. But the best instant messenger right now for the iPhone, and the one that works best with this background thing, is called BeeJive IM. BeeJive IM. And BeeJive has been a website for instant messaging, a web-based instant messenger for years maybe. I think I heard of it a long time ago. And they have an iPhone interface for the website version, but it just breaks its connection to the server all the time. I just found it very problematic.
Okay.
But the BeeJive IM, it's a little bit expensive. It's like an entire $15.99. It should really be $9.99, I think.
Free.
I know. But because the website's free.
Why there's other applications that do the same thing. This is the
and the BeeJive website is free. PowRingo is free.
Yes.
Does the same thing. Okay.
AIM is free.
Right. But the trouble with those, AIM is only AIM, whereas PowRingo at least is multiple IM, just like BeeJive is. Multiple MSN Messenger and all kinds of other things. The problem with like PowRingo though is it only holds your session for 5 minutes.
Okay.
So if you click the home key and get out of the interface, 5 minutes later it'll log you off.
Nice.
But if you go back into the program within 5 minutes, you'll see the messages people sent you offline, but that's all.
Okay.
And if you don't get back within the 5 minutes, you'll lose those messages. People will think they sent you messages, but they never got any. But BeeJive, and the reason you're really paying the money, is they have servers that will hold your session open for 24 hours.
Okay.
If you up to 24 hours.
Nice.
And,
nice.
But it's your choice. And then until Apple gets the push notification stuff working, they will send you an email. As if any messages come in while you're offline, it'll send you an email reminding you to go into the application. And then as soon as you start the application, it'll bring in all the odd messages that were sent offline.
I see.
You might say for up to 24 hours, not 5 minutes, like in AAM or PowRingo.
Okay.
And that's really what the money is for, because you're using their servers.
Cool.
But BeeJive is so set up right now for the eventual push notification that if you use Backgrounder with it, it'll run perfectly in the background. It'll... When a message comes in, you won't see anything on the screen, but it'll vibrate, it'll make its noise.
Cool.
The little number will increment in its icon, showing those messages and stuff like that.
Okay.
So.
Well, so I have an announcement to make.
Okay.
And it's very important. Besides the fact that we do not pay royalties for the music that we record in the restaurants where we go and frequent,
right.
And the reason for that is that we're not making any profits. One of the biggest issues that Mark and I have had with the show is the fact that we can't guarantee a certain number of listeners. We have a problem trying to figure out how many listeners actually download the show.
Right.
Last count, we discovered that it was about 20 people consistently downloading, but we think that it's just because they subscribed in iTunes, not that they actually listen to the show. And
yeah, it's really hard to tell how many people actually listen. Yeah.
So we are going to, instead of waiting around and waiting for you to come to us, we are going to actually come to you.
Okay.
And the idea behind this is that all these people out there who have these social profiles, social website profiles, like with Facebook, MySpace, LinkedIn, all these different sites that are out there, that's a playing ground for us to go and wreak havoc on. So starting next week, Mark and I are going to take our turns picking somebody to talk about on our show. We're going to then send an email out to you.
Steve Jobs.
Letting you know that we were actually going to be talking about the show. And the idea behind it is that Mark and I are going to try and guess, in your career, if we can figure it out from your profile, we're going to try and guess what types of technology you actually use on a day-to-day basis.
Okay.
We might try to surprise you and talk about something that we know more about regarding your career, like devices or tools that you might use that you don't even do that you don't use anymore.
Right.
And we encourage you not only to listen to the show, but to write to us about corrections, because hopefully we'll get things wrong and piss you off, and you'll want to send an email back.
And they'll want to sue us. Oh, I mean, send an email back.
Sue?
Yeah.
Sue? She was a beautiful girl in high school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway. Hmm. So that'll encourage hopefully some more participation or a lot of angry people.
Okay.
But the way that I see it, if you're silly enough to put a profile up on MySpace and talk about yourself, we'll use whatever we can to our advantage legally to get you interested in the show.
Okay.
Because this is a very unusual way of finding new people to watch. The traditional methods, methods don't seem to really work all that well, and we just don't have the money to put into all kinds of things to promote the show, including T-shirts with our WNO symbol on it, or mugs, or rings,
or
hats.
Free Esquire Electronic Ink magazine.
Free? Did you say? Excuse me, Mark. Did you say free?
I can't dump them. They still have no value on eBay. So
no.
I think there were 13 of them.
No one wants them.
Right. I bought 13 of them.
Nice. Well, if you're listening to this show maybe 20 years from now and you've discovered it somewhere under a rock, we thank you for listening to the show, because you are what makes us continue. Sure. Actually, that's bullshit, isn't it? We just get together to have dinner.
I know. Exactly. Yeah, I know.
But we appreciate the fact that you're listening and that you're interested, especially for the hour-long shows that we record when we're supposed to do half-an-hour shows.
Right. Or 20-minute shows.
Yeah, we figure 30 to 40 minutes is a happy medium, but we have so much stuff to talk about. And ramble on.
Did I ever finish my thought about, here I'm doing it right now, I never finished my thought about Munchcast.com, did I?
No.
I ran across someone on Twitter with a Twitter name of Munchcast.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And it got me curious. So and he pointed at what Munchcast.com has his homepage. And Wes and I were thinking about getting Munchcast at one point when we got Slurpcast. So I go to Munchcast, and it's totally unfinished. They never really put anything on there. It doesn't say under construction, but clearly it is. They never really finished it.
Uh-huh.
But from a little note down at the bottom, it appears that the intention was to go to some junk food place and munch on food while doing a podcast. But it seemed to be junk food oriented rather than regular restaurant oriented. And Leo Laporte, who's quite famous, was going to be part of this. It has his name as one of the participants in this.
Okay.
I
suspect one of the reasons why that fell through is it's hard to get guests on your show when it's physical, they have to be in the same facility or same place.
Right.
So he's winning that battle with Twit because he uses Skype accounts to actually get the feedback and like live lines, and he's got it all mixer set up. He does a really good job. It's also quiet, which our show is not.
Right.
Right. And we think that that's important.
Yeah, especially in junk food places, it might be even noisier, actually.
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
If they really wanted to do that, yeah, but anyway.
But Mark and I have known each other for a long time, and we hang out. And we're very consistent and punctual, except for when Mark waits for me at my job.
Right. And I have the iPhone to play with, I don't care.
Oh, okay.
But So even if they start doing
code,
right, even if they start doing Munchcast, I own shitcast.com.
Yeah.
So for the concept of going in the bathroom and sitting in stalls in the bathroom doing a podcast. So I'm sure we have no,
awesome.
We'll have no competition
That's
on that
awesome.
One. You know.
And the word of the day, the news today.
Right. I know, exactly. Yeah.
That's awesome. Oh, I'm sure a lot of people are going to want to subscribe to that show.
Podcast?
It's easier just to type shitcast than it is from podcast.
Okay.
Anyway, we're probably pissing off all the patrons in this restaurant.
True.
Anyway, again, thanks for listening to the show. Mark West.
Thank you. I guess we're done.